Greetings, Earthlings. Welcome to Voices from the Real World. Profile Theater is a theater company located in Portland, Oregon. Profile Theater centers the season around a season-long featured writer. Our best artists help us see. And at Profile, each year, we use a different writer's unique perspective as a lens that helps us see our shared world in new and surprising ways. Community Profile is an affinity space built around the structure of a free writing workshop. Participants in Community Profile meet, write, support, share, and bear witness to other people who may have walked a mile in their shoes. In Community Profile, we feature writers who have won awards and had numerous books published, as well as writers who are making their first foray into expressing themselves on paper. The result is writing that is singularly personal, provocative, powerful, moving, funny, tragic, beautiful, and that encapsulates the entirety of the human experience. What this podcast does is give those writers, those creators, a chance to share their life stories and their writing in a public forum so that we can celebrate and appreciate victories that have been won and challenges that have been overcome by people whose lives you may recognize or be experiencing for the very first time. And joining us today is one Jennifer Perrine. Jennifer is a recipient of the 2019 Oregon Poetry Community Fellowship from Literary Arts. Jennifer is formerly a professor of creative writing and gender studies at Drake University in Iowa, and they are currently the program director for College Possible Oregon. So I did not know this when we talked this morning. Mm-hmm. So you are formerly of Drake? You're not there anymore?
I am not there anymore, and I'm actually no longer with College Possible as of today.
It's all over with.
Yeah.
You know,
everything is changing right now. But yeah, I taught at Drake up until 2016. And then when I moved to Oregon, bounced around to a couple different jobs and ended up with College Possible for the last year and a half.
And so this is like the best of times, the worst of times kind of thing?
Kind of, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's a new adventure. I'm embarking on an independent consulting career, and we'll see how it goes.
You know, there's a lot of money in independent consulting.
There is. Yeah. There's ebbs and flows, I hear, though. So
it's funny, though. I have a few friends now who are in various fields as consultants. And it's just, you know, it's like, they can't even define exactly what they do a lot of times, you know, but because every company that's going to come to you is going to ask for something different.
Yeah.
You know? Well, yeah. Cool. Good luck.
Thank you.
Good luck. Jennifer, tell us and the listeners a little bit about what makes Jennifer Perrine, Jennifer Perrine.
Wow. So I knew you were going to ask this question. I still am unprepared. I would say that a couple of big things that make me, one is writing for sure. That writing has been a part of my life for almost as long as I can remember. Even when I was a little kid, I wrote little picture books and things, and it's been the thing that has kind of kept me somewhat stable through most of my life. So that's been sort of a huge piece of it. I think other things that maybe people should know about me are that I've kind of always been an educator and had a passion for educating folks, and that's been in kind of all different areas. So I was a teacher at Drake for a long time, but I've tried to always find different ways either to teach writing or to kind of dabble in teaching of other kinds, just because I've always had a love of learning. And whenever anybody else expresses that, my natural desire is to want to share anything that I happen to know about with them. And I try to respect their boundaries if they don't actually want to learn it.
When you're teaching writing, is it ever complicated? Because it's like a lot of times when professional athletes go into coaching, they're not such great coaches because they know how to do it really well, but they can't teach it really well. Is there ever a thing where you want the other people to just like know what to do?
I don't know. I think early on, I had a really hard time because I expected people, I guess I didn't know what to expect from folks. Like I had a certain knowledge of writing, and I expected other people maybe to come to the table with a certain kind of familiarity or having read similar things maybe. And the more I did it, the more I realized everybody comes from a different background. Everybody has a different life experience. They're going to bring things that I've never heard of that are going to be new and exciting. And so the more I can make space for other people to share how they've written in the past or what they've read that's been exciting to them, the better I'm able to kind of tap into, okay, I can kind of take it from there and then add maybe one or two more layers that are going to maybe either build on what they already know or push them in a slightly different direction, which is always pretty exciting.
Right on. Drake is in Iowa, yeah?
It is.
So what brought you out to the Pacific Northwest?
I had been coming out here for a couple of years during the summers while I was teaching, when I had a little bit of downtime. And I was coming out here partly to visit like some friends and family, but also I am a huge outdoors person, and there's not a lot of outdoor adventures in Iowa. It's just a lot of farms. I shouldn't generalize, but mostly it is. And so I would come out here to hike and backpack and camp, and I just kind of fell in love with it. And so I, after doing that for a couple of years, I thought, you know, I should actually just spend my time here all the time instead of trying to get out here whenever I could.
Right, right. That is part and parcel why I live in the Pacific Northwest.
Really?
I moved to Seattle first, and I thought I had moved to heaven.
You
know,
oh,
like
yeah.
I moved there in summertime. I didn't know, you know, I went there from Texas, and I had not known there were that many trees in the world.
Yeah.
Let alone in one tiny little corner of, you know, and I had a bunch of friends who just went camping, and that's what I fell in love with. And to this day, like, that's why I live in this area, because half an hour out of town, when I get tired of it all, I just go on a hike or I just go camping.
Yeah.
You know, that's gorgeous. So I met you, of course, through Community Profile. And can I ask you what brought you to Community Profile and why you stuck it out for the whole year?
Yeah, I heard about it through Ramiza Koya, who is a dear friend who recently passed.
Yeah.
But she had been involved with Community Profile in the past. And I had just kind of shared with a number of folks, you know, this is a great opportunity if you happen to be LGBTQ plus or HIV positive, you should check it out. And so I had, I think, probably reached out to you and said, you know, I'd be interested either in being a mentor or participant. And you very kindly nudged me to be both, which I am so grateful for, because I think, you know, the mentoring was a great experience, and it's sort of maybe more in my comfort zone. But being a participant for the whole year, my goodness, just the generosity of the other folks that are in that group and that join that space is profound. I think people are willing to share things about themselves or their experiences and just be really vulnerable with, you know, folks who, like back in November, were pretty much strangers to each other. And I think it's hard to find a group that you can just join, and people are so readily willing to give of themselves. And so I found it a really welcoming space, a really like courageous space for where people are sharing things that they write that inspire me and make me want to kind of step out of my own comfort zone a little bit. So, yeah, I've been really grateful to have that community. Even as we went virtual, it's still trying it out that way to, just have that spot to revisit every month.
The courage, I would say, is the thing that, like, as the person who's, you know, kind of on the outside, like I'm the organizer, but the willingness of people to go all the way there, and the willingness of people to listen to somebody going all the way there, has been really an inspiration for me. And it's great because it's such a quiet thing, and everything else that happens on the outside world is so loud and so bombastic and aggressive, you know, and like this little quiet group of people gives me hope.
Yeah.
You know? So, Jennifer, today you're going to read some of your work for us.
I am.
And I'm super excited about this. Maybe Grieving You.
Yes.
If you could read that one, I would love it.
Yeah. So this is actually a poem that I wrote. I think it was during the very first weekend of Community Profile back in November. And that very long title, it comes from a quote from Adrienne Marie Brown. that the ones you grieve may be grieving you. Dear mostly forgiven, dear have not heard from in 20 years. Dear, where have you gone? Dear, how have you been? Dear, turns out you live in Florida. Dear, turns out you're still with him. Dear, despite the gun he once held to your head, now he changes your bedpan. Now he's known you longer than I did, through the seizures and the stroke, through your kidneys gone to shit. Now he's beside you in hospice and has not told you that you're dying, but you're dying, dear one, who once woke me in the night to ask, do you love me? Will you stay? Where did you think I would have fled? Dear, I cannot call on the phone. Dear, cannot hear your voice through the line. Remind me one last time how you formed me in the hollows of your body, how you imagined me and then made me true, matter and fact. Dear, when you begged me to remain with you forever, I said, yes, yes, it was not an act. Dear child, I have only known as a child, never grown. I have stalked you through ether to learn your public face, the one that glows, graces my screen, and cannot be the same one you scrub clean each night, the way I taught you, warm washcloth and plain soap. Dear who I hoped for, dear wanted so much, dear I missed your touch, miss it more now that I'm confined to bed. How you once crawled in, rested your head on my pillow so close I could dream you back into my body. Dear, I'm not sorry I stayed with him, only that you made me choose. I did not know I could lose a child so many times, but each year your birthday is a disappearance, and I am both magician and trick. Dear, name slipped from the tip of my tongue. I cannot recall what doll you fussed over, what book you loved best, but I remember what you felt like, mouth on my breast, as I fed you, kept you.
Wow. That's fantastic. Can you tell me a little bit about this poem, like why you latched onto that particular quote from Adrienne Marie Brown?
Yeah, the quote actually was a suggestion from one of the mentors that weekend when I they had created a kind of a series of prompts, and they asked, I think it was something like they asked us to write a letter to someone who maybe we didn't want to write to or hadn't written to that we probably should have. And then they asked us to write the response from that person's point of view. And after I had shared with the group what I wrote, that title was part of kind of a whole like sort of poem or poetic piece that this mentor just recited for the whole group. And it was so, it just landed with me in this spot that I had been writing or wanting to write about my mother in the process of her dying. And this was the first time I really tried to imagine how she felt in these years that we were separated from each other, and just the idea that in all of the grief that I had around her, her passing, that she might have been grieving me or grieving the loss of her life and her children too. And it was profound, and I cried a lot during that workshop, but it was great.
It sounds intense.
Yeah.
You have a real knack for packing a lot of emotion into a very few words.
Thank you.
And that's really stunning. But let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Thunder is not yet rain.
When I was young, I was taught by my grandmother to listen to the night. Really listen for the rains in the distance. Listen to the rustling of the brush, for the cries of friend or foe. She'd say you must listen with your entire body, feel how the earth shifts when there's the slightest disruption. Because how you listen can mean the difference between life and death.
Malima's Tale by Lynn Nottage, directed by Reginald L. Douglas, is available for streaming October 7th through November 4th, 2020, to members and non-members at Profile Theater On Air. Learn more and listen at profiletheater.org.
And we are now back to Voices from the Real World with Jennifer Perrine.
What's the next piece you have for us?
I think I'll read Deal. This is a poem that's from a book of mine that's coming out later this year. And maybe I'll give some more context later when we talk.
Sure.
Deal. My mother dealt in sorrows, passed them out in rounds, face down, so we each received an even hand. She was every queen in the deck. Her men dressed as the one-eyed jacks and the king with the axe, blade behind the back, or turned aside to stay blind to her weeping. We each awaited our turn, unsure whether to hold or to cut our loss. We all called, all checked. She never claimed to know the rules, the difference between raise and fold. She only knew the stakes. She placed us her best bets.
Okay, like part of the reason why I love poetry is like my favorite performance art is dance, because I think movement is so much more accurate than language a lot of times. The language feels really clumsy.
I agree.
You know, but you make language super precise. And I always feel like I recognize something, like I recognize an emotion that I don't have the words for, that you have somehow put the words onto. And that poem, Deal, especially struck me like that. Like the first time I read it, I understood it.
Oh, that's great.
Viscerally, if not up here. Tell me a little bit about it.
So this poem and all the poems in this new book, they come out of a kind of a weird source. So right after our current president was elected, I was in a really disturbed state. I was really kind of disoriented by the whole thing. I was not surprised exactly, deeply disappointed. And so I committed to this process of writing a poem a day for the first 100 days of his presidency. And for each poem, I took as the title a word that he used too much. So he was always talking about deals and deals he was making. And I was thinking about what I was trying to do, and it wasn't always successful, but trying to take those words and remember like what they meant to me before I heard them in his mouth. And so among other things, my mother was a blackjack dealer in Vegas for a period when I was younger. And so I kind of latched onto that idea of dealing cards. And then I thought about, you know, all the random poker games I'd played and all these things. And it just seemed like there was this strange kind of metaphor that started to emerge, and all of these kinds of play on language, where I thought about the words that we use for when we play cards, like raising and like cutting our losses, and all of these other things that kind of show up in the poem that also showed up in my relationship with my mother, and in the way that she related to all of her children, as it being this sort of sense of both her wanting to mother and her being an amazing mother, and then when she didn't want to mother, just stepping aside and kind of leaving some of us like in foster care or in other kinds of spaces where we, I think, felt like bereft. And so sort of all of those things just came together, and it was is a strange mixture, but I'm glad it kind of solidified into something that made sense.
Wow. So you took something that was terrible in a lot of sense and made something beautiful out of it.
I tried.
Yeah. 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 How many times do you, do poems, do they come out boom, complete? Do you work it and rework it and rework it and rework it? Was every poem different?
Yeah, I usually do quite a bit of reworking, but I often do it in a really compressed time period. So like this poem, and I think even the other one that I read, I wrote them, you know, in the morning and then just reworked it all day long. And then by the end of the day, I said, good enough. And that's usually the way I operate. Very rarely do I work on the same poem for more than like a couple days at a time, because I start to lose the energy or the excitement around it.
Do you ever go back and read your old poems?
I do, like the drafts that I didn't finish. Is that what you mean?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, I do. And every once in a while, I'll find something where I think, oh, maybe I will go back and tinker with this some more and try it out. But usually I go back and read. I'm like, well, that was a nice thought, but I couldn't maybe get the like all the flavor of the language that I wanted from it. And so it's like it's better left as a nice thought than as something that I want to craft into a poem or a story
right.
or something like that.
Right. I'm gonna tell you a little secret.
Yeah.
I used to write poetry.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was so terrible. It was like I go back and look at it, and it's so like pretentious and gross.
I do that with I still have some like old notebooks from when I was a teenager when I wrote poetry, and I use that in like big scare quotes.
Right, right. See, my poetry is from when I was in my 30s, and it sounds like it's my teenage years. Like, oh boy, oh boy. So you're gonna give us one more?
I will. Yeah. This poem is also from the book that's coming out later this year, and it's called World. We are of, but not in it. We leave prints in mud, a blaze of crumbs to mark our path through vacant tracts. Snow fills our hollow steps. We withdraw into our flesh. We relax into astonishment, watchers behind glass. We cannot smell the tires burn, the plush pink smoke that chuffs from stacks. For all we know, the oceans still exist beyond the reach of our sunrise, sunset. We won't venture out until it's safe again. We're busy with danger. We have known the best of both padding our own and pressing weight on backs, footfalls on shoulders. Our better angels and devils crouch close, hunch over, whisper, we're not long for this. We wouldn't miss it.
I love that last line. I think it's so good. I think it's so good. Tell me about that poem.
So it came out of that same process of hearing the word world used in different ways that I didn't really enjoy, and wanting to kind of think about what the meaning of world meant to me. And this one actually might have started with a little bit of that last line and the idea of those like phrases or idioms, we're not long for this world, or we wouldn't miss it for the world, and thinking about what they sound like when you take the words the world out of it. And it's what emerged was kind of this really bleak landscape when I thought about it. And it was kind of infused with a little bit of, I don't know, I guess maybe apocalyptic imagery. I grew up in a household that was a certain kind of strain of religion that was given to a lot of apocalyptic imagery. And so it kind of infuses a lot of the things that I do or think about, even if I don't, practice that religion anymore. And so I just imagine that world in that kind of landscape where things are ending, and it strikes me as weird when I read this poem now, because even though it was written 3 years ago, a lot of the things that I feel like I'm experiencing now, and maybe a lot of people are experiencing now about not venturing out until it's safe again, and not knowing whether the ocean still exists because it's outside of this, you know, small world that we're a part of right now. All these things sort of feel like they're starting to be literally true instead of metaphorically true. I think at the time in 2017, I felt like the world was ending, and now I feel like, oh my goodness, there's there's all these things that really, like on a deep kind of visceral level, feel like there's this very strong presence of danger around us. And so I couldn't have predicted that when I wrote the poem, but it feels like it's got a different sense now than it did when I wrote it.
Wow. I mean, and isn't that crazy? Like all those feelings of dread and everything you were feeling 3 years, you're absolutely right.
I wish I weren't.
you were right to be terrified.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things is when artists are willing to talk to me about their creative process.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate that. You know, how many of those 100-day poems have survived?
Maybe about half of them were, you know, they were pretty close either on the first go or with some revision. The other half, some of them are bad. They're really bad.
Well, it's good that you let yourself go there, though.
Yeah.
Jennifer, thank you so much for sharing your work. Now, you've had 3 books, No Confession, No Mass, which was an award-winning book. It won the Publishing Triangle Audre Lorde Award and the Prairie Schooner Book Prize. That's fantastic. And you wrote In the Human Zoo and The Body is No Machine.
Yes.
So you can, folks, check out all those. And then this year, in 2 months, I think?
Yeah, September.
You have another book coming out.
Yes.
Do you want to tell me a little bit about that book?
Sure. So that's the book that these last couple of poems are from, and it's called Again. And the title comes from the last 4 poems that I wrote in that sequence of 100 were for the words Make America Great and Again. And those are tough ones, but so the title Again is both a reference to that and the sense of even though this feels like a fucked up time, it also feels like it's a little bit of history repeating itself. This is a lot of the things that are happening now are things that have happened before, and we're just hopefully starting to reckon with them now in a different way. And so that book is coming out in September from Early Press, and it's a book that it'll be out just before the election, and maybe it'll convince a couple people to lean lean Woo! One way rather than the other.
I miss that title so cool. That's why I love poets. That's why I love. Do you ever teach other kinds of writing as well besides poetry?
I have. I write a little bit of fiction, and especially science fiction, and so I've taught science fiction classes before, and I've taught a little bit of nonfiction, like essay writing, and I find that tricky because there's the sort of tenuous line between creative nonfiction and just outright lying. sometimes it's hard to manage.
Have you ever heard of Vona?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So you seem like a perfect person for that, either on the teaching or enjoy taking it. But yeah. Jennifer Perrine, you're terrific. I want to thank you so much for being part of Community Profile. I hope that we'll see you again, maybe even on here. Congratulations on your new book coming out. I'm super excited. I am. And you know that. Like I keep talking about it. I am super excited to read this book. I think your work is fantastic. I think you're a really great poet. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Bobby. You're terrific too. And I will definitely be part of Community Profile again in the future.
Right on. Right on. That's what we like to hear. So folks, that was Jennifer Perrine, and I am Bobby Bermeja, and this is Community Profile, voices from the real world, real people telling their real stories. For more information about Community Profile or Profile Theater, go to www.profiletheater.org. If you have feedback for me or suggestions for me, or you want to become a part of Community Profile, I'm taking all comers. Write me at bobbyb@profiletheater.org.
That was Jennifer Perrine. Look up Jennifer's new book, titled Again, which just came out in September of this year. And you can buy it from your local bookseller, Early Press, or go to her website, jenniferperrine.org. And that is it for this edition of Voices from the Real World. Voices from the Real World was put together by the creative team of Jamie M. Ray, Lion Producer, Robert A. K. Gagne, Sound Engineer, Rodolfo Ortega, Composer, and was recorded at the Willamette Radio Workshop in Portland, Oregon, which exists on the traditional lands of Multnomah, Calumet, Clackamas, Tumwater, and Malala bands of the Chinook peoples, the Tualatin band of the Kalapuya peoples, and many other tribes who made their homes along the Columbia River. We acknowledge and honor the ancestors and survivors of this place and recognize that we are here because of the sacrifices forced upon them. And we honor their descendants who live on. And my name is Bobby Bermea. One love and peace out.